Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Impaired Files with the Nerd Chicano, a.k.a. Raul Alejandro Mendoza. And this is the seventh edition. And, you know, I'm going to try something else today. I'm going to try something different today. It's something I've been thinking about doing. So no interview today, guys, but I hope you guys enjoyed this one that we're gonna do. As always, you know, I'm continuing on from last week's episode with Alejandra Almeida, and I'm bringing her back, and we're gonna have ourselves a nice little conversation here, like a good old 30-35 minute conversation. But say hello, Alex.
Hello, everybody. What's up?
We're back in the hot seat today.
Hopefully this time it's not all about me, you know.
No, I mean, like, you know, it's not gonna be all about you, but I mean, we're gonna be talking about things that, you know, we're kind of passionate about today. And yeah, I'm trying to do something like this. I said I kind of have an idea in my head, you know. I want to do an interview and then bring that back with that person the following week to have like a conversation with them about a certain thing. But we're gonna try it out. If people really like this and if I enjoy it, then I'll probably do this. But We'll see what's up. Right now, we're going to go ahead and get things underway. But first, I have to remind you all that this episode is available to Patreon supporters at the $1 level and up about a week early before anybody else gets to hear it on the public feed, on the Nerdcore podcast feed. So, you know, you can go and support us at www.patreon.com/thenerdcore and pledge to that $1 tier. And, you know, you get this episode a week early. So, also got to give a huge shout out to our executive producers of this podcast, a.k.a. Grayson Barker. He's the original one, the original, the OG. You can follow him on Instagram at GraysonBarker98, WarlordHim at 98 on Twitter. Also, Shane, that you can follow on Twitter at XSRRKK Twitch, and watch him on Twitch at twitch.tv/XSRK. Okay, I said it correctly this time. And also Journey, you know, you can follow Journey on Twitter at @IcedMocha_Jorn, JOURN. All right, so it looks like the important stuff is kind of out of the way right now, and now we can finally get into our topic today. You know, I remember back Alex to do, well, you know, if you guys didn't listen to last week's episode, you should probably go and listen to that before this. But if you don't and you want to hear what we're going to be talking about, Alex is a designer and artist, and we both have similar tastes in a lot of the movies that we watch, and a lot of the movies that we watch seem to kind of revolve around a lot of different topics, such as, you know, trauma, mental health. But one of them is a big thing, and it's, you know, it's the kind of the taboo of filmmaking itself, and that topic is sexuality. So today we're going to be talking about sexuality, and I just kind of want to point something out before we actually start. If you are uncomfortable with the topic of sex and, you know, talking about sex, look, I'm not going to talk about my sex life here. So, you know, I'm talking about it in film, but if that makes you uncomfortable, then I understand why you would stop listening to this. But Alex and I are going to be talking about sexuality in film today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is going to be your moment before you guys can get out, before we start talking about this taboo subject in film. You know, it's a big thing. You know, the old age joke of wow, watching a sex scene with your parents is so awkward, right? That's like the super old joke ever since like the beginning of films.
Yeah, and everyone always, even if it's not with like your parents, it's like with your friends or something, and everyone's like, oh, this is uncomfortable or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of that comes from the way that we're conditioned to look at sex as well.
Oh, yeah. Completely. Yeah. It's how you're brought up, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to me, I mean, I'm not going to say that, you know, it never made me uncomfortable. Of course it did make me uncomfortable. But once I started watching more movies, once I started studying the way the films are made and, you know, the creative processes that go into it, I really grew an appreciation for how sex is portrayed on film. You know, even though sometimes it's kind of portrayed a little bit too over-exaggerated. And look, guys, I'm not here. By the way, before we even like get more deeper into this conversation, I'm not making a case for pornography here. You know, that's something completely different. But I'm talking about, like, you know, in Hollywood, you know, erotic thrillers and stuff like that. I'm not talking about straight up shit you find on Pornhub.com. So, you know, that's not what I'm talking about here. Yeah, if you guys enjoy that, that's
no
on
plug.
you. Hey, that's on you guys. I'm sorry. Hey, I'm plugging them, whatever. Hey, guys, like, if you guys enjoy that, that's on you. But I'm talking about a different form of sexuality that's expressed on the on films, and it's the ones that, you know, that you usually see in a theater, or you see in a Blu-ray case. I don't know. You know what? I'm kind of diverging from this, but yeah. Look, it's taboo. It's a lot about the way we're brought up and we're conditioned to look at it. I think that for, like, the longest of time, you know, whenever it was, like, I still get it. You know, I tell people, like, people ask me, like, what are my favorite movies? I tell them I like sci-fi, I like westerns, but I'm a really big fan of erotic dramas. And the first thing they say, it's porn? So I'm like, no, dude. It goes, well, what's an erotic drama? And I'm like, it's a drama that has a little bit more, what's it called, sexual intercourse, or sexual intercourse is a big part of the plot, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's more delved into the end of the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm some of my favorites, of course, you know, I'm Gaspar Noé's Love, Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and Volume 2. I like Volume 1 more than Volume 2, but what's it called? They're both really, really good movies. Those are where, you know, sex and sexuality is a big part of the plot. And that's what I would, you know, kind of describe an erotic drama as. Those two films that I'm thinking about. And, you know, there's a lot more films that where, you know, it's straight up a drama, but there is sex in it. But not all dramas can be erotic dramas, you know. What's it called? But all erotic dramas are dramas. And that's the best way I can kind of put it. Alex, did I lose you?
No, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay.
You know, I don't want. Yeah, my internet sucks, but you know, it's all right. Yeah. So you know, one of the first what's it called? The example I brought up was Gaspar Noé's Love. That's one. That's a director that we really, really like. And what's it called? That film. I remember when I told you I was gonna watch it, and you're like, "Wait, have you ever watched this movie before?" I'm like, "No, I've never. I've heard of it, and like I've seen it here like the whole time. I've watched other films from Noé, but you know, I click it, and I'm like, "Oh well, this is like." I said, "Okay, how's this gonna be? The credits, you know, the opening, like, what's it called? The You know, the first logos come up, and then boom, right there we go. We
and the hit. Title screen.
Yeah, and then boom, it's right there, man. Someone's getting jerked off. And I'm like, oh, okay, wow, so this is how it's going to start. And, you know, the film kind of dwells deeper and deeper into the two characters' relationship. And you really start to see how, you know, a lot of these films believe that sex is secondary to the relationship. But in Gaspar Noé's Love, sex is part of the relationship, and it's a big part of why that relationship doesn't work.
Yeah, he uses it a lot in to form like a strong bond between the two people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So then when you know, when the three-way happens, that's really where the problem begins, and you know, Elektra and Murphy's relationship kind of dwells out, and it kind of becomes, you know, this whole big mess.
Oh yeah, everything goes out of control when she sees fantasy little bit.
yeah, because he starts sleeping with the other one, and you know, she ends up pregnant and stuff like that. So you know, it's not used as a like, oh look, here it is, let's look at it. Like, it's not as basic as that. It's you know, it's actually, you know, curated into the plot.
Yeah, it's kind of what moves the story along, actually.
Yeah, and I was, you know, like we were talking about yesterday when I told you, because I told you that I wanted to buy Climax because, you know, it's already on digital. And I'm like, oh, I'm so tempted. And you were like, oh, I'm going to act like I didn't see that tomato meter because it was like 71%. And you're like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm kind of interested. Let me go check out the tomato meters for all his other films. And the two films that he kind of, what's it called? That are rotten are actually the two of them that I really like the most. So Love has a 55%. And then Irreversible has a 57%. Irreversible is the one that he popped off with. Like, that one was the one that really got his name out there. And I was like, wow. And I checked the critics, and all of them kind of have the consensus that, that Gaspar Noé just uses sex as a shock factor. And I don't know if I agree with that, Alex. Do you agree with that?
I don't, but that's, I don't know. I feel like that's also the way they view it. Like, so to them, it's a shock value.
And I look, by the way, there are directors out there that use, sex as shock factor. I mean, look at a lot of the old, like, Brad brings up the, what's it called, the idea of Hostel, where that's not really sex, but it's like, the torture stuff. And it's like that stuff is like, it's kind of always used as shock factor sometimes. But I think with Noé, his the way he uses this topic, and the way he uses it throughout the film, it's very different, because shock factor would just be the whole film being just sex after sex after sex, and it's not. It's actually has, a lot of really intimate dialogue, and the conflict is shown throughout the film, but it's just the conflict itself is sex. And the decision that happened after, what's it called, when Murphy slept with that other girl.
Yeah. And also, I think the other conflict is when you really see how they're starting to disconnect is when she takes Murphy, I think, to the sex party or something like that. He gets upset.
Because Murphy's like, she can't, it's funny because Murphy was over here banging another chick, but he can't stand the sight of seeing his chick being banged by somebody else.
He can't even stand the sight of seeing her ex-boyfriend around her.
And he's like just being like, jealous. By the way, that was a Gaspar, that was him in that role. He was the ex-boyfriend. So, I what's it called? He's like jealous, and he's like, oh, like, I know you're cheating. I know you're cheating. I know you're cheating. But like deep down, like, dude, you're the one who was cheating as well. And yeah, and it just shows like, how the relationship kind of devolves, and it becomes this messy, messy thing. And it all stems from just that one decision that he had of sleeping with the other chick. And
The younger girl.
yes, excuse me. Yeah. And a lot of these films don't always get distributed the way you want them to be, like, in the theater experience, because it is, I if you think watching it with your friends is uncomfortable, imagine watching it with like a whole packed full of a room packed full of people. And I believe Love was stream was actually distributed in 3D. Some of those screens were in
Yeah,
3D.
because of that one scene.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit. Like, okay. Yeah. What's it called?
That's a little bit too much experience for me.
Yeah, it's a little bit too much experience for me too. What's it called? And a lot of that is also because, the way we're brought up as well. Sadly, they're like, okay, this isn't marketable. And maybe, but as well, like, I get it. Filmmaking is a, a money process. You have to make film, you have to make money from your film. And I bet the best decision for Noah's Love was to put it on Netflix and have people watch it there, because that's probably how he's making his money off. The theatrical run was probably not the same thing. But also, like, you're kind of denying the film audience a different outlook into filmmaking. It's not the gentrified project, the product that we see nowadays. Like, people are kind of afraid, to go outside of the box and watch stuff. It's kind of the way I view people's thoughts on Irreversible as well. People are like, it's, oh, this is shock factor as well. This is a really disgusting movie. And I'm like, it's like, kind of think about it a little bit deeper. The fact that he's showing us the effects first, what happened first, and ending it where the beginning of the day starts. It's supposed to be taken a little bit deeper. Like, you got to think about it a little bit. But this is not a conversation about the film audience and whether they think a lot or not. But yeah, it kind of just like saddens me that some, like, these films don't get put out in theatrical releases, because people see them as like, they're not, they're not the product they want to see at the moment.
And I was going to ask you too, because I was kind of curious, if they show on the tomato meter as far as the critics go. How many critics are American critics and how
Oh,
many
yeah.
are of European?
For Love?
Because just whoever critiques the films.
All right, yeah. Well, I can
Of like,
check that out right now because it is very different from how we see what's it called? Because the American audience is very different. And I talked about this with Aiden when we talked about this film. I was like, yeah, like what's it called? I prefer foreign films because I feel like what's it called? The American studio is just doesn't take as many risks as the foreign films.
right, and to kind of tie into that with Love. It kind of shows it in that as well, as you have Murphy, who's an American, and you have Electra, who is French, and it shows kind of their background. So sexually than he is, and that's why he gets upset so easily. Just a scene or being around that kind of culture.
Look, I'm over here checking out the critics and Owen Gleiberman from BBC.com said it's bold, fleshy, and audacious, at least in theory, but it is also numb. That's the critic, right? Charlotte O'Sullivan from the London Evening Standard gave it a positive review. Kevin Mayer from the UK gave it a Rotten review. The art house provocateur Gaspar Noé is famous for brutalizing his audiences. Now he's back with Love 3D, and this time he's done it solely with the power of boredom.
Wow.
Jordan Cronk. By the way, none of these are reviews from, well, except for Charlotte O'Sullivan, but none of these are women as well. Jordan Cronk, Little White Lies. Peter Howell from Toronto Star. Allison Wilmore from BuzzFeed News. Adam Lowes from Cineview. Tom Denson from Woman with a View, PJ Navarro, Patrick Navarro. Okay, none of these are like, I don't know where these critics are from, but I'm gonna guess that a lot of these are American,
Yeah.
Seattle, Washington. What's it called? Robert Frickery Smith. Yeah, nothing like other critics. There's just some diversity here in these critics. You have women, you have some POC in here, but I don't see anything from like other countries. Oh, look, Japan's Time, James Hatfield. Oh, but that's a white dude writing for the Japan Times. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, look, we're here. We go. Carlos F. Herdero, Caimán Cuadernos de Cine. The film can boast one thing: having the most idiotic and moronic dialogue in cinema history. Full review in Spanish.
Oi.
Ui.
Oh my goodness.
But look over here. Gonzalo Lira Galván from El Fanzine. Although masterfully acted by its three main actors, the only new offering in this film responds to the natural need of Noé to cause a shock in the audience. But that was a fresh review. Yeah. Yes.
And it's funny because I wonder, okay, Love, when did Love come out? What was the exact year?
2015.
15, 4 years ago. I wonder if people were to see it now, if they'd have a different
Yeah. I
opinion
would
about it,
I'd be
even
interested
though
in
it's
that
not
too.
far from.
2015 isn't that long ago if you think about it.
No.
Yeah. And I don't want to jump away from Gaspar, but there's another film that I always think that I watched in my history of film noir class. And it was a neo-noir. It was done by by Lily and Lana Wachowski, back then when they weren't what's it called, when they hadn't transitioned yet. So they were going under the Wachowski bros. But Lily and Lana made a film called Bound. It's a really, really good film, and it also includes one of the most beautiful, I mean, shot and angle wise, beautifully shot sex scenes ever. So you start in the back, well, not in the back, in the front, and these two women are obviously having sex together, and the camera kind of like goes, but it does like a J. It goes straight and then it curves and it goes on top and it shows, it's passing through the skin and everything. And that was one thing that we talked about last time when we were talking on this last episode. we were talking about, like, you know, over here people are like, oh, how can you watch that? And you're like, well, look, I'm over here appreciating the colors, and I'm appreciating the cinematography and the angles which the camera. And I went back and I thought about Bound. I was like, oh, there's a beautiful shot. Like, you know, I was thinking about, like, I don't even care what's going on in this shot right here. The fact that they were able to do that kind of, like, straight curve it and then go on top of the skin and show everything, I'm like, oh man, that was, like, beautifully, beautifully shot.
Yeah, because I don't know, I guess I mean, you could see the appreciation in the process of how it was shot, but people, I guess they're so shocked by what's happening literally right in front of them, they forget everything else.
Yeah.
And now they're like, oh, I feel weird.
Yeah, like, I feel weird. And, like, I understand. Like, we're not here to discredit that. Like, you know, I can definitely understand where people are kind of coming from. But, you know, there's also, well, look, I found another critic from En Filme, from Sofia Ochoa Rodriguez. For a woman that knows nothing about what's going on inside a guy's head, this can be the perfect guy to understand in the opposite sex. Gave it a score of 4 out of 5. Oswaldo Betancourt Lozano from Chilango.com. A great movie, but differently, not for those who get offended easily. Original score of 3 out of 5. You know, Jesus Chavarria from Cine Premier. Despite being interesting, it's inconsistent and is both a demonstration of the courage as a director as well as its shortcomings. 3 out of 5. So, you know, a lot of these are not kind of like bad reviews, but also some of them kind of say, like, oh, a lot of it is a shock factor and stuff. But, like you did say, people are kind of entitled to this opinion. And, you know, we're, what's it called, the way we consume film and the way that we interpret film is very different between other people. Like, you and me probably have different ways we interpret some movies. You know, we kind of have the same opinions on a lot of things, but, you know, if you were to ask, you know, the interpretation of a certain movie, it's going to be different from somebody else. So if people think that this is a shock factor, then okay, yeah, I can get where you're coming from, because, you know, you're entitled to having your interpretation of the movie.
Right. And it's funny because I would probably never, not even never, if I were to recommend these movies to any of my, like, friends or something like that, they'd probably be like, what the hell did you just make me watch? And I'm just like, yeah. Well, you know.
It's called Art House, baby. Art House. That's house, the genre. Art House, man. By the way, how did you get into Gaspar's filmography? Who recommended him to you?
Nobody recommended him to me. I just found Love on Netflix.
Oh, really? Damn.
So I just clicked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just clicked it, watched it, and at first, like, obviously the opening scene, like we just said earlier, was like, you're right in it. So I was like,
oh, shit.
All right. I'll give this another, like, 10 minutes, and if something doesn't change, then maybe I'll just, you know, dip out. But no, then it goes back into Murphy when he wakes up about how he hates his life and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, shit, this is kind of interesting. So then it just kind of hooked me.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay. And then I looked up Gaspar and I saw all his other movies. And I think at the time, also, like, on Netflix as well at the time.
Which one? Irreversible?
And so I was like, okay. The Void.
The Void. Oh, Enter the Void. Yes, Enter the Void was on Netflix for a bit. They didn't. The bastards took it off.
No.
Yeah.
And so I went and watched that, and then I just went and watched his other ones.
Yeah, Enter the Void is a really, really good one.
It's a really interesting looking one.
God, this just devolved into the conversation on Gaspar. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Movie.
I know that's a really, really good movie too. It's visually really good too. It's like, you know, it's literally a fucking drug trip.
Yes. Big time.
Yeah, it's not sex, he's always talking about drugs too. But the fact that he did say that he shoots a lot of his films on drugs, I was like, oh man, that's crazy, like, damn. But whatever,
so
man.
Transparent.
So transparent, like, he doesn't care. Yeah, it's like, you know, that's kind of like bold. Yeah. For a director, and that's also in the way that they portray these scenes, you know, it's bold of a director to choose the way that they want to present the subject matter. And, you know, the Wachowskis presented it in a very different way. You know, Gaspar presents it in a very obscure way as well. and Von Trier does it in a certain way. And we, you know, a lot of people knew when it comes to TV as well. People were like, "Oh, HBO, that's where you're gonna get all the, you know, the nudity and stuff." And I'm glad that HBO recently added a consultant, a sex consultant on set to make sure that everything is being performed, you know, safely, and nothing is being, you know, no harassment is being done. Which, because I agree with that. I agree 100% that there should be a consultant on that set, because sometimes, especially if you're a director who's starring in the film, you kind of write scenes for yourself, and you're like, you know, how am I as an actor going to trust this director if he wrote something for him to do that he might not see a use for it in the story, but he wants to do it.
And I think that there should always be kind of somebody on every set if there's going to be just, you know, make sure nobody's overdoing anything, crossing any lines, any boundaries that these actors have placed. Because I have a feeling that, like, a lot of people see it as, oh, these actors sign on. That means they're signing away.
Yeah. Yeah, and it should not be that way, because, you know, part of having sex is having safe sex. You know, the version that, you know, that the consensual way that nobody is getting hurt, no one's getting hurt or anything, and no one's being put in danger. So, you know, when you have a consultant on set, not only does it help the quality of it, because you find out, like, hey, man, like, I'm just going to tell you, like, this doesn't looks a little bit too exaggerated. You might want to come from it from this different angle, and, you know, the director might change that. But it also makes sure that all actors on set are being safe and they're being treated, you know, the way a director should be treating their cast, which is, you know, in a good manner, making a safe work environment. And I'm really glad that HBO did that.
That was a good call.
Yeah, especially because of their show, The Deuce. It's literally about the pornography movement in the 60s. So, you know, they had to get a consultant on there, you know, so.
Yeah, that would be very smart decision for them.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm also trying to remember other, you know, because, you know, sex is also exaggerated at times, you know. Sometimes it's, like, made to be this thing that isn't what it is. And that's sadly, you know, the point where people are like, when I ask people, like, why are you so, you know, uncomfortable watching this? And some people tell me, like, honestly, they go, it's because that's not what it is. You know, what they're showing you on screen, that's not what it is. And I think that's where the consultant can help you a lot, you know. Like, and also, I think,
I mean,
okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, a lot of creators, and I'm sure directors, I'm not a director, so I don't know, but your imagination's very wild. So what you think would work doesn't necessarily translate.
Yeah.
In actual
real life experience,
you know?
Yeah. Also, nobody should be watching films to kind of get a look of what they should do, you know? That's for your life to find out. And also, whenever you go watch a film, you should have the notion in your life, in your head, that, hey, this isn't exactly how it is. I'm watching somebody's story that's created. If it's about, you know, if it's based on a true story and stuff like that, whatever. But most of the time, that writer is crafting the story in their point of view and the way they want to make it. So the director will implement those scenes in the way they want to implement it. So you're not watching something that's, like, you know, quote unquote, like, real. You're watching something that's been crafted, and it's been, you know, it's been revised thousands of times to make sure that it's presented in a certain way. So you should never go in there thinking, like, okay, this is how it is, you know, like, this is the way it is. It should be, because every director has a different view in their head of the way they want to present certain subject matter.
Right. You don't want to walk in there taking notes necessarily.
Yeah, you don't. And a lot of that is also the way that, what's it called, the world is built sometimes, and, you know, the way that we consume things, and it sadly leads for us to have preconceived notions. And, you know, but also you should be a little bit more open-minded to, you know, to kind of breaking down certain things that you see in a movie, and always know that things aren't put in there for no reason. They're not put in there for no reason. There's a reason behind them. If they're put in there for no reason, chances are that you're not watching, you know, a really, you know, detailed out film. You're kind of watching a blockbuster where things such as, like, you know, So, you know, something like that's kind of thrown away by there, and it's like, oh, really, that really didn't mean anything. But when you have like a director that meticulously crafts their, you know, their work that they're putting on the screen, something as, you know, as taboo as sex means something. Yeah, I feel like I've been taking this whole
I mean, I
conversation.
feel like in blockbusters, they just kind of throw it in as like a filler scene.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like, hey, we got 5 minutes to spare in the runtime. What are we gonna do? Well, hey, let's go get some tension in here. And then you're like, no, like, and then you see the couple after, and they're like, not really, you know, there's not really any build up after that, you know? There's like, it's just there.
And
Yeah,
now they're madly in love with each other.
like, you know, that's what I kind of, you know, I know that director of what's it called, of what's its name, Blue is the Warmest Color, that guy Kimchi, right? I can't remember his last name. No,
Oh,
I know he's an
yeah,
asshole.
it's a very long last name.
Yeah, I know he's an asshole. I know what he did is really wrong, but one of the things that I do commend him for doing, especially, he doesn't give it to you right away. He doesn't give you the sex right away. He's building up to it. You know, there's tension there. You know, there's tension, and once that tension cracks and that sex happens, you're like, okay, I'm rewarded, because then after this, it doesn't go downhill. Like, I mean, well, it does. This relationship goes downhill, but you know, it doesn't, like, the character development doesn't go downhill. You're still riding on that high that they have with each other. You know, fuck that guy and what he put those actresses through as well, right? But I wanted, you know, in a way, I don't want to excuse it, but I did want to command that, you know, the way you build up to that certain moment, that's what counts. It's also what I command Luca Guadagnino for in Call Me by Your Name. There's a lot of tension there with Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer, but the sex doesn't happen in the first 20 minutes. Like, it's building, and when it finally builds and you're rewarded with it, that relationship doesn't feel thrown away after. It keeps on, you're riding on that high, and you're still riding on it.
Yeah, and I can another film I think that did that pretty well was Carol.
Yeah, ooh, I have never watched that one before.
By Todd Haynes,
Oh,
and
man.
I finally gave it another shot because I had actually told Ashley that I didn't care for it the first time around. Like I fell asleep like twice.
Yeah.
I don't like this movie. And then I gave it another shot a couple weeks ago, and I was like, okay, it's a good movie. I can see why people hold this one kind of near and dear.
Yeah, Carol, where can I find that?
That's actually on Netflix.
All right, I'll watch it. I'll watch it. But you know, this is a really, really good conversation. What's it called, Alex? I'm really, really into this. Let's go ahead and, you know, get a little bit of last final stuff in here before we wrap up. I guess, you know, it's, I don't see the reason why it would be taboo. I don't see it, but you know, at the end, it's always, you know, the way that we see things in this world, and not everybody's gonna have the same outlook, because you know, life would be boring that way.
Yeah, it's too because I kind of grew up in like a traditional Catholic background where you don't necessarily talk about these things in the open so freely. But I just kind of I'm I, if I mean if anybody ever meets me or knows me, they know I'm the opposite of traditional. I think it's just kind of just how I ended up being, and so I don't mind talking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's also because society has made it look like, oh, if you talk about that stuff a lot, oh, you're a slut or something like that, right? You know, it's like it's these societal kind of like constructs of what, you know, where these things, like, you know, if you're asking me about why I like, you know, Bound so much, I'm gonna tell you, well, first of all, I think the fucking actresses are great at what they're doing, and I also love the way they pursue their relationship and the way that it's presented by the Wachowskis. Or, you know, you're talking to me about No Way Is Love, and you're like, why do you like that? It's like straight up porn, isn't it? And I'm like, no, it's a little bit different. I really like the way those sex scenes are shot, and I love the way that the camera does not kind of go away from them. It really concentrates on one, because you see some of those shots, and what's it called? Especially, I'm gonna not use love anymore. I'm gonna go to Irreversible. That, like, at the end when Vincent Cassel and that girl, I can't remember her name, but she's a really, really good actress.
Monica Bellucci.
Monica Bellucci, yeah, Cassel and Bellucci, when they're in that bed, I love that Noé does this thing where like the camera does not move away that much. It's always kind of going from one certain area to the next, but it's not doing like a straighten their face or something. You know, it's kind of stationary right there where you need to be seeing it. And he does the same thing in Love, but I really like the way he does it in Irreversible.
Yeah, it's kind of like kind of effortless.
Yeah, it's like if we're,
No
because
sudden
no
movements.
sudden movements, and like if you're like me, when I first watched that movie, I was really, really into it. So like I didn't even notice that I was moving. I felt like I was the camera, just, you know, kind of watching, spectating and moving with it. I didn't see the movements like so as clear. And I find that so interesting, and it's a very, very different attempt when you think about it. There's also scenes in Love where that happens, you know? It's like the what's it called? The three-way. It's the camera is from the top, and it's right there. It's just showing like that much, and there's not a lot of movement. It's like it's just stuck there, and it's wa you're watching this unfold.
Okay, and you're kind of you're paying attention to the characters. You're letting them do all the telling, basically.
You're watching them as they tell the story, and that's very, very different from, let's say, what's an example? Like some regular movie where it's softcore and it just, you know, kind of like
Side
just,
angle.
yeah, just the side angle, or it concentrates on the hand gripping the arm, or, you know, the what's it called? It's about to show the you know, the nipple, and it's just showing the hand like caressing it or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Where it's like it's supposed to be intended, but like sometimes when you take risks and you show what's happening, it can really be beneficiary for the thought, for the plot.
Right. It's just showing the intention of what's going on as opposed to just showing what's actually going on.
Yes, exactly. And you know, I commend that guy so much for what he does with that camera, especially in those three film in those two films. 'Cause it's a very different attempt. And you know, a lot of his career is built on, you know, doing things that are out of the ordinary. And I really like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm so interested in the fact when how different it is, like, you know, 'cause he's an Argentinian, he's from Argentina, but you know, he really developed his craft in France. So you also look at all the French films and you're like, wow, the different ways that that these scenes are shot from when you're kind of mastering your craft in a different country other than the United States.
Yeah, and it's also one, because I've seen some French shows as well.
Oh yeah?
They don't have like God, I don't even know how to explain it. So they don't use any set. They just use it like, okay, this is ship. This is normal. No need to like, oh my God, they're having sex now. You know, blah blah blah. But when you see American TV shows, it's just like one scene that they have throughout an entire season, and it's like, okay.
And then when
Whereas French shows throw it in whenever. It's just like, okay, yeah, cool.
And oh, and when it happens, you know, you have the really intense music playing, and you know, it's kind of really, you're kind of, the angle, what's it called, the camera angles, like really making you feel like you're kind of claustrophobic. A lot of the, you know, I feel like a lot of people need to understand too, like the reason you feel kind of uncomfortable sometimes is the angle that it's being portrayed in. You know, like if
And
it's really close up,
it's like all up in
I'm like, I'm all up in it, and you're like, oh man, like please let me breathe, let me like kind of step back, let
it.
me breathe here.
Right.
I think that's so interesting,
Like
but
an intense, like pushing you into it as opposed to just sitting back and observing it.
sitting back and observing, yes, I agree, I agree. And you know, this is really, really fun, and we're gonna have to keep on doing this more. You know, we'll see what we can do later, but for now, I think this is a really, really nice way to stop. This is a place to stop. I want to recommend you guys to go watch some of these films. Watch these with an open mind. Understand what you'll be wa not understand what you'll be watching, because you know, like everything can be understood. But I mean, like, you know, kind of prepare yourself what you're gonna watch, but consume it in a different way. Don't just watch to be entertained. Watch to kind of consume something different, a different outlook. And I can recommend you guys Love. Not everybody should watch Irreversible, but if you're gonna watch Irreversible, I just want to put a you know, a content warning out there, a trigger warning, has a very, very, very detailed rape scene. And I would understand why people would not want to watch that.
So very intense.
Yeah, it's very intense. But what's it called? I was really surprised that the actress was the one who wanted it to be filmed that way. What's it called? Mandate. It was like, you know, she had a lot to say in the way that that scene went, which I think is really, really interesting. And, you know, Irreversible Love, Bound. You guys should really watch Bound. This is a really, really good neo-noir. And, you know,
watch Bound.
Yeah. Oh, it is so good, Alex. You know, it's, I believe that's the second film from the Wachowskis. It came out right before The Matrix. It was in 95, I believe. And it's really, really, really good.
I just looked it up.
Yeah, it's a really, really good movie. So you guys should go definitely watch those movies. And it's been a really fun time with you, Alex. We'll see when we can get you back on. I really, really like this.
Yeah.
I really like this. And I think that I could continue doing something like this in a way. We'll see how it can fit. You know, maybe we can do 1 week an interview, 1 week a conversation. Hell, we can make these conversations part of the Patreon. This could be a Patreon section of the interview when it happens. But I don't know. We'll see what we can do. Alex, as always, you want to let them know where they can find you?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter at AlexElm_design.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. You have any other recommendations from what I, like, you know, other movies that you think that you can recommend them, apart from the ones that I just talked about?
Let's see. You said Nymphomaniac, right?
Oh, I didn't recommend that one, but I did use that one as an example. Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend people to watch that just because, well, first of all, there's two parts.
Yeah, it's a long one.
Yeah, it's very long. I kind of feel like it touches on everything of like a sexuality wise, I guess.
Yeah, that one
into
really...
realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of becoming done with it in a way, like you're over it,
type
of thing.
Yeah,
but I would recommend that.
Yeah, that one's a really, really good one. It's a really, really good one, and I really do recommend that one too. What else is a good one for you to recommend? Carol. I mean, I'm gonna go watch that for sure. Call Me By Your Name is a really, really good one, guys. You guys go watch that one. God, they're both really good performers in that movie.
I'm hoping that they give us a solid freaking good old
sequel,
film here. I'm kind of tired of historian type films.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. So, I mean, if you don't have any other recommendations, we'll go ahead and part ways here. As always, you know, you guys can leave a rate review on your podcast app of choice. Go ahead and follow the Nerdcore, the podcast network that this show is a part of, on Twitter at the Nerdcore _ Instagram at the Nerdcore. Also join the Facebook group, the Nerdverse, the official Nerdcore group, to talk about all the wonderful discussions in the world of nerd culture. Or you can just post about how Brad is wrong or something. I don't know. Kind of direct all the hate mail to Alex at Straw Hat_Alex. Yeah, if you didn't like this episode, you think that we should never talk about sex, please direct all the hate mail and all the concerns to Alex at Straw Hat_Alex on Twitter. Please do it. I'm not gonna bother reading it, and he's probably not gonna bother reading
it. Don't do
it
toward. Don't at me though, because I'll go off on your ass. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. There's two other. Look, I already talked about how I need to make a nickname for one of you, Alex's. Because, what's it called? I say Alex, and they're like, which one? Well, Alex Flores, you know, that's our Alex. And then there's other Alex, it's you. And they're like, well, they're both our Alexes, but, you know, they're both, they have the same name. Well, not the same name, but same shortened version of their name.
Right.
Yeah. But I hope everybody's having a wonderful time. Alex. Yeah, Alex is the weeb. That's the weeb. But I can't just say, hey, weeb, what's going on, weeb? But I want to thank Alex here for joining me again this week, and we'll be back next week when we have another interview. I don't know who it'll be, but I'm pretty sure it'll be someone awesome. So, as always, thank you so much for listening, and the file is closed, but not classified. See you guys on the next one.